A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, joining us now, play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke, joins us. David, how are you?
Hey, David.
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Very good.
Good.
Very good. Good to hear from you.
How are you, Scotty?
Scrambling a bit, but I'm doing all right. Can't complain.
You can call me.
Oh, I'll call you. Yeah.
Come on, man. Let people in.
No. All right, so let's...
why not? They're going to know soon enough.
They're going to know soon.
Well,
David, why don't you announce it?
I'll let you talk about it.
My daughter has COVID, and since I work with Ron, who is 75 years old, in a, what is the phrase, abundance of caution, I went and been testing and was negative at home, but went and did the Jazz rapid test today and have received both a negative and a positive test, and so... in an abundance of caution, until we can get the full test back, Scotty G will be doing the game tonight instead of me.
We're excited. We're going to miss you, David, but excited for Scotty.
So we got
Wally Pipp here on your interview.
Stop it. So I didn't know we have like an A sample, B sample thing going on here.
Yeah. I got two negatives and one positive.
Well, to me, that's
oh, man.
Two negatives and positive makes a negative. So you're
it
good.
It does, except for the fact that, like, if for some reason we don't need to get into it, but if for some reason I came back positive, and there is a reason, I mean, there's a reasonable reason of why, right? Like,
yeah.
If I had had no exposure at all and had this, I would probably be reacting differently. But if we have, like, if I were to some reason to come back positive and then have worked with Ron, I'd feel really pretty terrible. So
yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
So you were able to watch a little bit of the press conference today. Kind of give me your thoughts on what you
mean until I got notified that I might not be able to play.
That's why I said watch, you know, assume maybe TV otherwise.
Scotty's over here beating around the bush, and David's like, just say it, Scott. Just say it.
So I actually took away, I mean, I think there was a lot of stuff we already knew. You know, and I thought it was great. Will gave us like the three words to like dig into. But I thought one of the more interesting comments was how much the entire front office was used in the search. So, and I thought it was a really interesting comment from Danny Ainge that this was an opportunity for him to get to know those guys better.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was really, that was actually my biggest takeaway. And maybe that's just, you know, too esoteric and off the beaten path for everybody. But the fact that the Jazz had engaged all nine people in the front office and had them in the search, and then, you know, that's a hard way to do it. And then had them all, you know, I know. Then you do something interesting when you have that many people going on, though. Suddenly, like, let's say you're just, you know, you're going to find out about Will Hardy. Well, then nine different people are making phone calls to probably different people that they know from different experiences about who he is. And so it does give you a pretty good depth of, like, well, what did everybody report back and what did they all have to say? You know, if Charles Terrell's making phone calls, was at Nike for, I think, 15 years, he's calling different people than Bart Taylor, who started in San Antonio with Austin, and then is calling people that probably were Will's interns, who are calling different people than Justin Zanuck, who's, you know, right? And so the fact that they use the whole front office and Steve Schwartz, who is, you know, got a different whole different collection of people, I think that was really interesting to me, that that's how the Jazz went about the search in that manner internally. And so But I also think it's really important moving forward that these guys have now all feel engaged and a part of it. It's not just Danny coming in with some heavy-handed, I had my guy, you guys now have to just deal with my decisions, I'm the CEO. It doesn't seem as though that was the search at all.
We heard the question asked about his assistant staff, and he kind of gave a veiled answer. But, David, are we getting any more understanding or idea of what this full staff's going to look like?
Well, let's run through last year's staff, okay? So, Sergei has gone to Portland. Dell Demps has gone to Minnesota. A bunch of the video guys, Connor Varney, former Utah Jazz broadcast assistant, got a job with the Phoenix Suns. Congratulations.
There you go.
Really cool story. Chuck, who was kind of their head video guy, just got a job with Sacramento Kings. Vince LaGarza should be signing with the Milwaukee Bucks here shortly, if that's not official. So that leaves us Brian Bailey, who's coaching the Summer League, so clearly still on staff. Lamar Skeeter, who is coaching Summer League and clearly still on staff, and Alex Jensen. So really we're getting down to Alex Jensen. And if there's one kind of great strength to Alex Jensen is his ability to kind of roll and not be highly emotional and work with, you know, and work through things. And so I think there's a real chance that Alex Jensen returns. I think he's under contract, and I think his contract's real. He did not take that Utah job, so I'm just going to assume that there was a pretty nice little bump that was honored to him for that. And he's incredibly valuable. So if I'm, you know, Ryan Smith, Danny Ainge, Justin Zanuck, Will Hardy, and I have someone who's that talented and they're under contract and they're that good a basketball person and they have this much institutional knowledge, I'm certainly not pushing them out the door. So I'm eagerly trying to get you to come and work and work with us. And I think Alex's kind of personality, who he is over time, kind of can work into that. I kind of suspect that comes together. It's going to take some time, but I would suspect that comes back. So I'm hopeful. Maybe I'm too hopeful just because I like Alex so much. But and I think that then runs down the staff, doesn't it? Isn't that everybody? Jeff Watkinson.
Yeah.
And I think Jeff Watkinson brings a really unique talent in his ability to both have his medical background. He was basically going to medical school and was a physical, had all of his degrees, and then pivoted to coaching. And so he's a great conduit between the medical staff and the coaching staff. And that's a unique skill set. So I can't, if he's still available, I would certainly think that Will Hardy would want to keep that. So, you know, that, and then you fill the pieces. And I don't know what pieces you're filling right now. And there aren't, you know, there hasn't been a huge amount of job change this year. So there aren't a bunch of people like sitting on the sidelines that aren't involved. So that'll be interesting to see what they do in that regard.
So I'm a little curious, and just, I mean, this is maybe not even just the Jazz, but just in general, I think we all assume that a guy gets a head coaching job and then the GM says, all right, here's your salary pool. This is how much money you have, divvy it up and go build your staff. But when you're, you know, and again, this isn't a knock on him, but he's 34 years old. He's a first-time head coach. Does Danny Ainge and this front office retain the right to say, okay, you have two slots that you get to fill for your people and we have two slots or something along those lines? Is that kind of how that works, or is it just all Will Hardy's decision?
No, I think it's collective. It's a collective work of everyone involved. Are there some people that you really have to have on your staff? Okay, great. Let's get those taken care of. And then let's go look at staff makeup and who are the other people that are available. And hey, you know what? In this process, we interviewed these three people and thought they were amazing. It'd be great if you could talk to them. They interviewed Joe Mullinex who is a really interesting guy and Will's worked with him. Well, I have a sneaking suspicion that Ime Udoka is probably not going to want to let that guy go. So then he's suddenly not available. Or maybe he is, maybe you're going to make him, a lead assistant of some sort. So I think it just gets, it's a collaborative effort. But I've been around plenty of staffs in which the GM has chosen Kevin O'Connor put people on Tyrone Corbin's staff. Once these staffs have expanded, it's not uncommon at all. So that wouldn't be that wouldn't be like overly heavy-handed.
David, as you've had time to let this trade really sink in with Rudy Gobert and some of the assets that the Jazz got back, who are you most excited about? Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Walker Kessler, Jared Vanderbilt. Am I missing one? I think that's it, right?
Yeah, 2027 and 2029. I mean, those are the, right? The 2023 pick, I think we can, like the way I talked about today on Locked On Jazz, is the 2023 pick, you can probably guess, in all likelihood, it's going to be about 18 to 25. Uh-huh. Like, I think Minnesota finishes anywhere from third to seventh in the West this year.
Yeah.
Right? Clippers and Warriors are probably better, and if the Lakers get Kyrie, they're going to be pretty good if Kyrie decides to play. And so, you know, and then New Orleans is going to be good. And so there's enough teams in there. They're going to be good. So they're going to be that one. I think you probably are 17 to 25. 2025, who knows? Like, there could be an injury. Anthony Edwards could be grumpy. Cat's unique. So I think your range, or Cat and Jalen McDaniels could really develop. So your range on that one is probably like 15 to 25, right? I don't think with Rudy still healthy, if Rudy's still healthy, they're going to, you know, Rudy's great. 2027. Who knows? Like, I think your range is 1 to 30. Probably 1 to 25. And 2029, your range is 6 to 25 because yeah. You're 1 through 5 protected.
If Rudy I'm sorry, were you going to say something there?
So 2027 and 2029 are the two I'm most excited for.
I do like Vanderbilt. I think he's a solid player. I think there's something to work with there. But let me ask you this. If Rudy Gobert was a free agent right now, could he sign a four-year, $160, $170 million contract with a player option on the fourth year?
I would think so. Why? I'm not following this.
Well, no, my thought process is Rudy Gobert at 30 years old, where he's at right now, does he command that kind of money on an open market? Or did Minnesota have to vastly overpay to get him to couple him up or to bring him on that team?
I think Rudy might be the most finely tuned athlete in the NBA. Like, the amount of work he puts in, and actually like appropriately proportioned as well. So I'm not particularly worried about Rudy's aging. He has had some knee issues recently. Like, he did have to have an MRI in the offseason to kind of make sure there wasn't something wrong there. So there's certainly some wear and tear on a 7-footer body, and 7-footers age less well than some other positions. So there are some things that would trend me in the wrong direction. I mean, the issue on Rudy is like, how detrimental would the last two years of his contract be, I guess, on your roster? And so, you know, Minnesota is pretty hamstrung when we start talking about 2027, 2029, and maybe even 2025 on what they have left that they can do. They don't have, like, if this for some reason doesn't work, their only option then is trading Kat or trading Rudy. Like, they don't have, like, if this doesn't work, they don't have, and they're going to lose D'Angelo at some point, I would think. So those things, you know, I don't know if that's where you're heading with. I'm not sure I totally followed you wanted to. Led me down the road, and I didn't.
No. That's not my fault. I'm just looking at what Rudy's owed right now. All right, he's got 4 years on his contract. Fourth year being essentially a $47 million player option. If Rudy hit the open market right now, could he get that same exact contract that he's owed over the next 4 years? That's all I'm asking.
Maybe. I think so. I do think so. I could be wrong on this. But I keep hearing, and it makes sense, that the next TV money is going to be bigger, not way bigger, not smaller. Like, I keep hearing that the new max contract is going to be $70 million.
Well, there you go.
And so when you look at Jokic, I just think I just took Nikola Vukovic and Nikola Jokic and turned them into one player. They don't need to be, because Nikola Jokic is good enough. But when you look at Jokic's deal, like, that number was mammoth, right? That's 60 in his final year, I think. So Rudy's 40 seems more palatable. So I would think so. I mean, let's see what DeAndre Ayton gets. I think he's going to get a max contract here pretty soon.
David, I don't want you to try to reach into Donovan Mitchell's mind and tell me what he's thinking about everything that's been done to this point. So I'm going to just ask you, if you were in Donovan's shoes and you saw everything happen with, you know, Pascal and O'Neal and now the move with Rudy, seeing the new hire, the guy they hired, and just reading the tea leaves and seeing the landscape, how would you feel about where you're at as an all-star, where you are, and where this Jazz organization is headed, based off of everything we've seen?
Maybe uncertain. Is that fair?
I think that's fair, and I think uncertain is probably the first thing that comes to my mind, too.
But also, let's just think about where the organization was, right? So let's kind of walk into where the organization was in the last two major periods of time here, right? So they and Donovan can be whatever, however he wants to react. But so we got to draft night. We didn't do anything, right?
Yep.
There was nothing to be done.
Yeah.
Like, we got to free agency. There was nothing to be done. Right? Like, when the Jazz decided, whatever, over the last 3 years, to re-sign every single one of their players, it felt great at the time. But the lingering after effect of that is that you get in trouble because of it, and then you have to trade your draft picks to get out from under contracts, and then you're over the tax. Like, so there is, like, there is a ramification to be paid, and they paid it this offseason, which was that there just weren't anything for them to do. So Donovan can feel like a little like, however, I don't know how Donovan feels, but the fact is that, like, the organization had really one route only going into this offseason, which really was one of two choices: bring the whole thing back or make a monster trade with Rudy Gobert or Donovan Mitchell. And they've done one of the things. They now have multiple routes by which they can move forward. They can use draft picks to acquire talent. They can move other pieces of their puzzle to match what they have now better. They can trade if things aren't working out. Some either trade deadline or next year, they don't need to do it any sooner. They could trade Donovan for another cadre of picks and then be in a full rebuild mode. But they have multiple options now. And so I actually would argue that if Donovan feels uncertain, which is probably a word that most people would classify as a negative, it's way positive for the organization, because they were like paralyzed, basically, or neutralized prior to this. So I don't know how Donovan feels, but if you want to know like what the organization's options are in routes, I would far rather go to Google Maps and have them tell me I got multiple routes to get somewhere than going to Google Maps and them saying, sorry, you're stuck, buddy. Like, you're right there. I know there's an inferno going on.
Uh-oh. You there, David?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm out here there for a second.
Well, I'm pacing.
All right, so this is me not being good at my job, and I don't know how to ask a question, but this is more an observation. So I don't like the narrative that seems to be out there that Rudy lost and Donovan won, that the team said, we have to choose one. Donovan's the guy that we're building this organization around. Rudy, you're out, and it's a win. You know, one player won, another player lost. I do believe there's a couple things you can look at here. Number one, you got a new head coach that got a five-year contract as opposed to a four-year contract. And I do think that you just told the rest of the NBA, if you want to take one of our all-stars, this is the asking price, an unprecedented amount of picks, and that's what it's going to take to get one of our all-stars. But they are available if the price is essentially right. And so the narrative out there that this whole team is like, this is now built around Donovan Mitchell, and this is Donovan's team, and he's going to be a fixture here forever, I just don't like that, because I do think that, hey, look, at this point with the Utah Jazz, everything's on the table at this point.
So there were a lot of different things you touched on there. And I would – so, like, who won who – it's kind of irrelevant, right? Like, okay, if people want to go play that game, they can go Stephen A. it. Like, it's just irrelevant.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, quite frankly, I just – did a huge research project on Lockdown. It's why we're so wildly successful, is because people don't want that crap anymore. Like, that's literally what we found out in our survey. Is people want good conversations about their team, and not the only time anybody ever talks about their team on a national level is that these, you know, totally flamboyant conversations of irrelevancy. And that's what that is. Now, who won, who lost? I don't know. Like, I do know this, and I'm pretty comfortable in this. I don't think the Jazz went to the offseason saying we have to trade Rudy Gobert. I'm pretty comfortable
with
that.
I'm with you on that.
They got an offer that was significant enough that they had to take it, or that they decided to take it. And I think they also had read the landscape of, and this is something I haven't heard anyone talk about. I'm not entirely sure, and I'm surprised I was wrong with this, because I actually thought that this wasn't the case. I think the window to trade Rudy was shrinking. So, like, there was the Atlanta conversations, but I can't really piece together anything that felt real there. Okay? Like, I don't know what other conversations were actually out there that are super real.
Yeah.
So, like, if you have Minnesota coming at you, and there's an environment that people think you're willing to do it, and that they're going to have to pay for it because you're willing to, because he's still in his prime, he's still got a bunch of, and Minnesota goes and does something else instead, and then, I mean, I don't know that Minnesota was the only suitor. I can't imagine Danny Ainge got that offer with that being the only suitor, but I don't have a feeling that there was a lot of other stuff out there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, the win-loss narrative is uninteresting to me. Like, what's more interesting to me is, like, why now? And I don't really believe that they went to the offseason with this as their sole intention. I think this came about, and it was too good, having just gone through two processes where they were completely hamstrung and had no flexibility, and frankly are finding that, you know, Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanovic aren't yielding a lot in the trade market right now, that they didn't have a lot of different options to alter their club, and they really didn't want to bring back the same team.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
I mean, my decision-making tree, if I was them, would have been, what can I trade other than Donovan and Rudy to go get a major piece and give us a chance? And those major pieces weren't that interesting. They were Kristaps Porzingis, Tobias Harris, or Damian Lillard. Those were the only three I could come up with. Like, DeJounte Murray, you're not giving away a ton of picks to do this if you're the Jazz, because you can't give away more picks.
Yeah.
So you couldn't pull off any of those three. Then you couldn't really improve the team, it doesn't seem, by trading Bojan Bogdanovic and Mike Conley a great deal. Well, then what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Your two choices at that point are moving one of your stars if you can get a incredible package, or two, bringing the same thing back with a new head coach, which maybe. I also think Donovan's trade value is more longer lasting.
Yeah. Well, David, appreciate it, man.
Great stuff.
Go get that next negative, okay? Let's go.
I'm just sitting around waiting for it now.
Take care of yourself, David.
All right.
You take care of yourself. You're the one who sounds the sickest of the group.
It's these allergies, man. I get these these seasonal allergies.
Flonase.
This wind is killing me.
Flonase. Flonase. Every day. Flonase.
I'm going to hit it.
Thanks, David.
Okay. See you guys.
All right. David Locke, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.